Welcome to Let's Talk All About Her, the podcast hosted by me, Kirsten Bowles, clinical psychologist and founder of All About Her, the Center for Menopause. I'm going to be chatting with our All About Her health practitioner members. Think psychologists, psychotherapists, nutritionists, sexologists, naturopaths, the list goes on. Whatever you're doing right now, listen up. Because together we're going to bring everything we know about health, well-being, and growing into the fullest expression of yourself to you. We believe this second chapter of a woman's life should be and can be all about her. I love the colours that you wear. They suit you in so many ways. They really do.
Yeah. If I go out in black, some people say, oh, whoa.
Yeah.
Are you okay? I do. I went out on the weekend and I wore.
Because you have leopard.
I do have leopard. I'm a bandit for leopard. And I also wore a dress on the weekend that was black with a big chunky necklace. Everyone was like,
Are you in mourning?
Are you all right? And I was like, well, I've got the bling. I'm like, yeah, I know, but we just didn't know if you had anything that was black. I went, yeah, fair point.
Fair point, yeah. I'm sure you look stunning. You are a stylist after all.
True, on a good day.
Yeah.
Yeah, on a good day.
How do I pronounce your surname?
Mungavin.
Mungavin. Awesome. All right, well, let me get into my zone and try and begin. Yeah, I think if we're doing this way, I talk to you. Normally I'm on a Zoom with the other person. So it's, as I was saying to Anna, I'm like, I'm a bit thrown now. Yeah. What do I do? Cool. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the Midlife Bites podcast. I have just launched it and you're my second guest.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Oh, so thank you for having me.
Very
excited to be here.
Thank you. So for those of you who wouldn't know, this is Emma Mungavin. Yes, I got it right. And, yeah, I kind of put the call out to my biz buddies while we've been on this crazy and amazing weekend away at an amazing venue and said, who wants to be on the Midlife Bites podcast? And thank you for putting your
hand up. And I said, pick me!
I'm really, really stoked because Midlife Bites for me is this mix between me banging on about the things that I like to bang on about, sometimes getting health experts to kind of talk about whatever their specialty is in terms of health in midlife, because we all know that it can be tricky, health in midlife, all the things that fit under that category. Mm-hmm. But it's always been my favorite thing, and probably no surprise given I'm a psychologist, to hear and to, I guess, have a platform where I help women share their stories and where they're happy to share their stories, of course, because I feel as though when we hear other women's stories, there is absolutely going to be women out there that they can relate to the story, and it's reassuring. It normalizes the really shitty parts and difficult parts of life, and usually along the way, there's a perspective or something that, you know, my guests, I anticipate, and certainly when I've spoken to women before, something that they've come through and the way they've come through it is helpful for women who maybe aren't yet through it. And so this is where I think women sharing their stories with women is just so, so powerful, which is one of the big reasons that I've got this platform. And, you know, midlife does bite.
Mm-hmm.
I'm yet to meet a midlife woman who's got through to this stage of their life. Yeah, it's just not possible, right?
No, it doesn't happen.
Yeah. So before we launch properly into your story and the way midlife has bitten you, I'd love to just know a little bit about you and have that the listeners kind of know.
Absolutely. So, well, my name is Emma. I am a mum of four. I have got 6, 8, 10, and 12, two boys, two girls. I am a military wife. Mm-hmm. My husband was in defence for 25 years. Mm. And has been now medically discharged.
Yeah.
due to complex PTSD, depression, anxiety, and a whole raft of musculoskeletal injuries and ailments from his
jumping
time,
out of plane,
all the things, all the deployments, and then sort of just sort of, you know, it all took its toll. So I went to school in Perth, went to uni in Perth, and then moved over to Sydney, and that was where we lived for about 18 or 19 years.
Oh, wow. I didn't know
it
was that long.
Yeah, it was quite some time. And then I lost my job at the ABC, which I loved. I was working in the children's television department, and I was made redundant. At the same time, Reece was going to be posted to Canberra, and little did I know that that was the sort of beginning of his unravelling. And we found out we were pregnant and we had all these children and no job, and it was Sydney and small house, and my parents are still here. So we made the decision and we moved back. And Emma 2.0, I'd sort of come back. I'd said I would never come back to Perth. I loved Sydney. And then we were back. So I really did have a, I cried leaving Sydney. I cried on the plane. I cried when we touched down. I was like, oh, I did not want to come back. And that was at the end of 2019. And I must say, this time on, I'm really happy. My kids are really happy. There's a lot of space here. Emma 2.0 is a work in progress. And it took a long time to get to that. But just in terms of it's that next step and, and what does it look like and who do I want to be when I grow up? Because I'm refusing to grow up. But what does that look like and who do I want to be? So having that luxury of being a little bit older, wiser, and having lived through the muck. You can sort of go, oh, okay. What does that look like? And appreciate the opportunity. Even though at the time you're sort of like, oh my God. So yeah, it's all about really Emma 2.0.
Emma 2.0. I like it.
We might be up to 5.0, I'm not sure, but Emma 2.0 sounds.
She's gonna keep evolving.
She's just gonna keep doing her stuff. But yeah, it's sort of Emma 2.0.
Wow. So, I mean, I guess what's really interesting, and this happens a lot, and I see this a lot with my clients, is that it's actually hard to tease apart what causes this significant change in the, you know, the Emma 2.0 or the Kirsten 2.0, you know, as an example, because midlife, not only are you kind of, you know, my thing is perimenopause and menopause. So not only are you going through that, but midlife is just fraught with significant change and often a lot of challenges. It's well known to be one of the most stressful times in a woman's life, in particularly women's lives. And so I see people, they often come to me and say, what is it? You know, what is it that's kind of causing this distress, or what is it that's causing me to move into the 2.0 version of me? Is, you know, is it perimenopause, or is it the relationship breaking down, or the massive move to a different country or a different state, or kids leaving home or whatever, you know? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't think you can tease it apart, right?
It's almost like it's a ball of clay, all the different colours that you've put together.
Somebody mushed all the Play-Doh together.
Yeah, and now you can't actually separate the colours, but you know that this is what you're working with now.
Yeah, definitely.
And even our bodies too. Children, no children, we can't fit. We're squidgier where we've never been squidgy before, or through, you know, medical or disease or ailment where we've lost lumps and bumps or bits. So we've also got to reconcile who we are, who we are now, and grieve what has gone, and then what we've lost, but also what we've still got. And it's a really hard thing to navigate too, by the time, you know, in terms of grief or relationship breakdowns or, you know, even sort of personally, I guess, job and redundancy. And it was such
That's a
part
big
of
deal.
Your identity, and so much was wrapped up in that. And then to either have it, you know, removed or taken away, and dealing with that grief and putting yourself back together. Also too, just in terms of clients that I see, they sort of, they've dressed or they've worn clothes that they think is them, and it defines them, and then you take that away and they're lost. Or they're, I don't know who I am, or how I used to dress in corporate before kids doesn't feel right now, or I'm just a mum or just a, and they're so far down that pecking order
yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
it's, I've got everyone else ready, all the mental tabs. If I got the lunches, the, oh, so-and-so doesn't like that muesli bar, and what do I need to do? Oh, shit, maths test.
Or now I need to give a gold coin donation and buy a yellow t-shirt.
And I've got to whip up cupcakes. How am I going to do that with this? Yeah. And it's like, okay, what's least dirty, most clean that I can just grab?
Mm-hmm.
And then because of all of that, and they either go shopping or they're like, oh, no, the kids need new sporting equipment.
Yeah.
Oh, we've got that power bill coming up. Or I've got to get the car service.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the thought of going shopping for them is like, well, we don't. It's not really a sensible choice, is it?
Yeah.
Or I don't know where to go. Or I go into the shop assistant, you know, and the shop assistants look them up and down and go, what are you doing in here?
Yeah.
Or you're waiting to buy something and you're just invisible because you're not seen.
Yeah.
And the art of customer service is dying. and then, you know, when you're sort of squeezing into something in a horrible change room under the hideous lights and you're squeezing it in, someone comes and goes, oh, my God, that looks amazing. And you're like, really? And you don't believe it, but you buy it. And then you get it home and you can't get it up.
Yeah.
And the light in the harsh light of day, you're like, what have I done?
Yeah.
And it just is demoralizing, I think. Rather than helping you up or helping you bounce forward, you just can spiral down and then, oh, I'm fat, I'm worthless, I'm juster. Mm. And you just sort of sink further. And when you sort of become so detached and lose yourself and you're sort of not who you were, you don't know who you are, you don't know how you fit, and you're a service department for making sure the dog's got food, getting walked, picking up the poo, husband's got everything they need, the mother-in-law's got the present for brunch on Sunday and Monday and all the things.
Yeah.
And you sort of just go, I'll just get my leisure gear on and my oversized T-shirt and some leggings and that'll do.
That'll do.
And it's just that's the thing that I think, at least now we're talking about the things that were once upon a time taboo.
Mm.
I mean, I sort of think, you know, what we used to not be able to talk about, and now at least we're literally pulling the cover off, and it's at least normalizing it to go, oh, my God, I thought I was the only one. And to just remove that and have that commonality and go, you're doing a really great job.
Yeah.
You won't believe what I did the other day too. Yeah. And it's like, oh, wow. It's just removing that stigma about it's just you.
Definitely.
And sometimes it takes to understand. You try and talk to parents or hubby or even kids, and it just, they have no context.
No.
Or they don't get it.
No.
And then that often makes things worse, because then you don't feel understood as well as everything else. And it's just,
nobody gets
it's just
me.
I'm like, you might as well be speaking another language.
Yeah.
And
for sure.
It's just, it can really be soul destroying.
Yeah, yeah. I think in all of those things that you just shared, which you shared from the perspective of like talking about other people, and clearly you hear this all the time in your styling job, but it also kind of gave me a flavor of your life.
Oh, yeah.
Like I think I know what
circus, herding cats. The chaos, right?
Yeah, the chaos. But I guess I also think, you know, were you the woman in leggings and the oversized T-shirt, or were you the woman who had the corporate ABC job and had certain outfits for that?
That's really funny. It was certainly not this. it was, what was I? There was a lot of Leonie Edmondson, Veronica Maine, very structured.
Yes.
There were always heels. There were still bright lipstick and earrings, though they weren't as garish and bright as what they are now.
Yeah.
But it was always sort of put together. There was the wraparound dress, the blazers, all of that kind of stuff. And that was who I was.
Very classic.
When I went out, classic silhouette, very much sort of covered and respectful, conservative, but with a hint of colour.
Yeah.
Which was really, it was acceptable and it did the thing.
Yeah. Interesting word, acceptable.
Yeah. And it was, you know, within that sort of realm.
Yeah.
And then, interestingly enough, through having the kids and stuff, I sort of just disappeared. Mm-hmm. And there's a photo of me that's in our bedroom, and I looked at it, and Trixie, number four, was newborn, a couple of weeks old. And there was a photo of all of us. And I sort of look at me, and I just want to give that girl a cuddle. And how old would I have been? I was 39, and she just looked so sad. And she was trying to hide. She was just wearing a black Sacky dress with a coverall. The photo's sort of black and white. She's got this newborn baby, beautiful family, smiling, but you just want to give her a hug because she felt so disconnected. And she was, you know, recovering from birth and trying to breastfeed. I wasn't a very good cow, but I was giving it a go.
Positive thing to have. I wasn't a good cow.
They were more ornamental than functional. But, you know, trying to do all the things and then coming to terms with what new life looked like.
Yeah.
And I was still mourning the loss of a job in an industry that I adored and not sure. The uncertainty was just horrendous. And now we had four little pink squidgy things that needed us to sort of pull together and then dealing with defense and army and Reese's declining, you know, health.
Yeah.
And I just was, I it was literally clothes were just to stop me from being naked.
Yeah.
It was literally, I felt horrendous. I felt horrendous about how I showed up. I just wanted to be invisible. I felt discarded. I just, all those emotions.
They're big, sad words.
Really heavy. I just look at that girl in the photo and I just want to give her a big hug and say, come on, let me be your cheerleader. Let what do you want your life to be? What do you want to feel when you get up in the morning?
Yeah.
And that's why.
Yeah.
In terms of, I guess, color and what I do now is so important.
Yeah.
Because it's just about being your most authentic you. Mm. And I think in the world where we don't have control of so many other things, the only thing you've got control over is how you show up and how you present you. Mm. And that's on you. No one can take that from you. And I just think that's really important.
Mm.
So to do the work, to work out what your 2.0 or 3.0 looks like and getting through the muck of the pain, of the relationship breakdown, of the illness, of the loss, of all of that stuff, as well as reconciling all the changes, all the changes in the hormones or, you know, what you used to be able to do and now you can't do or why does that work or all of those other things that come along, the brain, the mind fog, what did I come in here for?
You know,
all of that stuff and you're sort of going, am I going batty? Or the fierceness too because quite frankly, you get sick of everyone's stupidity and having to.
I like the fierceness.
Just like, and I never had it before I had my Charlie, my oldest son.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it was like this new level of fierceness and anger was unlocked. And I was like, don't come for my kids. Don't come for me. Like all of a sudden what you've put up with for so long, everything gets redefined. Mm. And then, of course, people don't like it when you're putting up boundaries because you're not as available to them or as easily used.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden people don't like that. So then you get coined with, oh, well, you're a bitch. You're a bitch.
Yeah. Like, difficult. Difficult woman.
Yeah, all that stuff. And you're like, well, no, actually I need to be because we're our own. We've got to be our own biggest advocates because no one else will do it.
Yeah.
Well, they won't do it properly.
Yeah.
Well, they won't do it with our best, you know, interest at heart. And that's a huge lesson to go, okay, I'm responsible for me.
For me,
I'm excited by it, but it's taken a long time to get comfy with it.
Yeah, well, and that's, I'm really interested because you did have a lot of loss. I mean, you lost your career, which you loved, and then you lost the country you'd settled in, you know, and obviously found like 18 years, you know, overseas. You come to Sydney, you come back, you go back to Sydney, and then you have to come to Perth as well, you know, back to your hometown. Mm. But it sounds like it didn't feel so great in the early times. So loss, like that's enormous amount of change. And you know, midlife bites probably doesn't even capture all of the stuff going on. And then I also, you know, having worked with many veterans of many ages and a dad with similar kind of challenges as your husband, there's also loss there too because they are different.
You absolutely.
Know, that changes them when they're having those.
And the fact that we had to become aware of it at a time, you know, it's not a sexy thing for the guys to put their hands up for, given the stigma and stuff. And you know, sort of I guess the age we are, my husband went in when he was 17.
Yeah.
And he finished it around 42, And during that time from, you know, 96, 97, 98, the world changed.
Yeah.
Like with 9/11 and just things will never be the same.
Yeah, yeah.
And the wars will never be the same and the technology and all that stuff. And the Australian Army, you know, hadn't been so busy for so long and the intensity of that and the high pressure and all of the jobs, whether you're sort of boots on the ground or zeroing in weapons or reading the reports and preparing the ministerials. I mean,
all of the
stuff and the things. And I guess in my husband's case is it was not one incident that caused or triggered. So we don't actually know what the triggers are. And of course, I mean, you know, parenting triggers you whether you know it or not, you know, service or no service in defense. But it's sort of like it brings up the stuff that you didn't even know you had. Just in terms of and also too, you know, when you've got little people out there, it's like your insides, your hearts are running around on the outside and you've got that ferocity to don't muck with my little people along with, oh, please don't do that. That's really annoying, Mum.
Yeah.
Like, just don't. Yeah. So you've sort of got, you're trying to hold it all on.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And then also too, seeing this person who you have known for so long, all of a sudden it's that more foreclosing down or the sort of it's just it's their evolution and you're not the same either.
No.
So how two very differently evolving people can still
stay together, hats off to you.
Come back and you know, dance the dance as best that you can. It's just another, it's like, oh, I didn't realize this was in the brochure. And sickness and health. Yeah. I was like, Christ on a cracker. I had no idea this was coming down the line. Like, it's just part of how the, you know, how it sort of goes. Yeah, and you go,
okay.
Seatbelts on, everyone. We're going. Not quite sure what's going to happen, but we're here.
Yeah, yeah. And so I'm keen to hear how you, you know, from whatever perspective, but how have you navigated all that to be Emma 2.0? And, you know, I know there, of course, we're constantly evolving, but it seems as though you've landed in a pretty good place within yourself. And the evolution for you from now is just kind of fine-tuning what is a steady sense of self. So how did you get to that point from the cray-cray that you were experiencing?
Yeah. I really don't know. I mean, there are a lot of tears. Yes. Certainly a lot of tears.
Yeah.
Different types of therapy, I think, have really saved me.
Yep.
Rediscovering exercise.
Yep.
Boxing. I'm much nicer when I've punched things in the morning before I start my day. And I guess the exercise has been really good medicine for strength. And just, you know, I see a psychologist. She's amazing. And I came to the realization, I was like, wow, I think I might actually be one of the strongest people I know. And it wasn't about the actual physicality of lifting weight or hitting. Although that's great. But just in terms of, you know, when you look at resilience and what we bounce back from, when you are literally going, oh, I'm going to do this. And then you get through it and you go, I did it.
Yeah, yeah.
And
amazing.
It, like to literally just take that time and go, oh, wow, okay, oh, well, I did that. Like I thought my world was crumbling and it was, and it was despair and you're like, I'm now going to do this. You know, whether it's financial or just part of your soul that is just sort of hurting or broken or home or, you know, something you've got to do something with your kids or go to a specialist and that fragility and all of that stuff. And then you take stock and you go, whew, what a year that week was. Like, and you just sort of go, okay, cool. But it's that strength.
Yeah.
So, and also too, I guess not being afraid to try things. Like I've connected with some amazing women doing amazing things who do Reiki, who do meditation, who, you know, massage or sort of dancing, singing in the car. I sing terribly, but God, I love it. And just actually taking the time to listen to others too, to connect.
Yeah.
I think connection is so important.
Yeah.
So you don't feel alone.
Yeah.
And I guess part of that is when we moved back, I got to reconnect with a lot of
old friends who I'd known for a very long time. But I also made a conscious decision to throw myself into a new community and make that community.
Yeah.
Because I know that it doesn't make itself.
Yes.
And I know, like, our family unit is really small, even with extended family.
Mm.
So what I lack in aunts and uncles and cousins and all of that, I create my own.
Yeah.
And we've been really mindful and purposeful to create that.
Yeah.
So that you don't feel alone.
Yeah.
Because I think you can be surrounded by people and still be alone and lonely, and you can be on your own and not be alone and lonely. So making sure that you have that support, or you at least can go where you need.
Yes.
And just being very aware.
Yeah.
And I think sort of little Emma was never aware because she was always told she was too much, or she had to be like this, or what would people think, or you're too sensitive, or you analyze everything. So you just sort of keep pushing it down, and then you end up with the girl in the black dress who is just trying to keep it together and be hidden.
Yeah.
And that's more damaging, I think, to everybody. Mm. Because if mama's broke, like
everything falls apart.
It's like no one, the dog's not getting a walk, the food's not getting bought. It just sort of implodes.
Yeah.
And that's dangerous too.
Yeah.
You know, just in terms of looking after yourself. Mm. But they've been big lessons.
Yeah, they've been
huge. And they take a long time to sort of feel normal.
Yeah.
Because just the conditioning and all the back work you've got to unpack.
Yeah. That second guessing happens for a while.
Just and
slowly,
until you sort of go, no, I'm sort of okay.
I'm doing it.
I'm doing the thing. And you're like, oh yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah.
So I'm really grateful. And and also too, just being, I guess, open to go, oh my God, life can be amazing.
Yeah.
How lucky.
Yeah.
So doing a lot of reframing stuff too. And there's so much available, which is amazing because, you know, I think back when our parents were our age, they didn't have the they couldn't just plug in to the knowledge, and they couldn't plug in to being so open.
Yes.
So we're really lucky.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And to just destigmatize and go, no, no, this is all okay.
Yeah.
People just want to feel like they're normal.
Yes.
Like, this is part of it. Everyone's got their own
wide range of
normal. Everyone's got their own chaos, but chaos is part of how we roll.
Of the human condition,
And your chaos and my chaos might have little overlaps of being the same, and that's awesome, but they're also allowed to be very different.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And I think just making sure that people know that that's okay.
Yeah, I think that's a huge part, one of the reasons as well for this, these conversations and getting them out into the world. But what I'm interested in as well is how did Emma 1.0, who wore Leona Edmiston and Veronica Main, with a little bit of colour, go to become this beautiful, colourful. I mean, the clothes you wear are beautiful, as are the clothes I'm sure that you wore back then, beautiful. But you were vibrant.
Yeah,
you
were a vibrant woman. There is a lot.
Tell me the path.
I guess it was just more of a how do I want to feel? And even, I guess when I started sort of coming back to, okay, cool, I am not as defined or rigid as sort of the institutions where I'd worked maybe or defense in terms of, you know, when you're going to Government House and meeting dignitaries and stuff, you know, sometimes a loud crab dress might not be.
Yeah.
Sort of, you've sort of got to, you know, dress for the function and give each thing the respect and, you know, where you're going, you need to take in place, particularly for such an institution as government and defence. And, of course, there's rank and seniority as well as a very traditionally alpha sort of
environment
with sort of certain protocols and stuff. So I always had a little bit of fun there, but within a very, you know, sort of these are the boundaries, which was fine. And again, at work, you know, I always wanted to sort of present a certain way because that was part of what I thought my brand was and what my role was. And then I guess when I was unshackled by that, I actually got to play again and I got to have a little bit of fun. And you know, when you're on sort of maternity leave and walking around the shops a lot and sort of seeing people before you sort of have to go back and it all sort of either you're changing a nappy or everyone's coming home and you've got to, like, I don't know, do the things. I had a bit of a play.
Okay.
And I went out and I sort of went, oh, I haven't been in, oh, okay. And yep. then I'd done a styling course and I was like, oh, well, what if?
Yeah.
What if? All this stuff in my head about, oh, Emma, I know you've got that build, you shouldn't wear that, or they don't make that, no, and you can't shop here because heaven forbid you're a size 14 or whatever it is. Mm. And then I was sort of, the more I was in the shops and the more I was working through stuff in my head and just seeing it, I was like, oh, well, I wonder what if.
Mm.
And it was the middle of the day, so I sort of took a little bit of a chance and had a play. And I was like, oh. And some of it, I went, oh. But some of it, when I put on, I went, oh, my God, this feels.
Yeah, okay.
Fab.
Yeah.
And I was like, look at me. Look at me. And that connection is amazing.
Yeah.
And that's why I love what I do, because I just think life is so much better when you love what you're wearing and the space you're in and treasures, and when it feels like you and you just shine that little bit differently.
There's and alignment, right?
And it just sort of feels like home.
Mm.
And like I tell my clients, just because I love leopard or crustaceans, I will not put you in leopard or crustaceans if that's not your jam.
Yeah.
Because I don't do the work to make clones of myself.
No.
But to see someone push the boat out and have them come back and go, I never thought I could wear this, but it feels amazing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I feel happy. Yeah. Like,
and, this feels like me.
And the energy, it's like, oh, my God. And to see that excitement and to get that feeling, that little dopamine hit.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what? You go and wear those earrings. Yeah. I don't care. Or they, and just those little things.
Yeah.
And those little nuggets of self-care that then snowball into, maybe I'll try the pink lipstick.
Mm.
Maybe I'll try the coral. Mm. Or maybe.
Mm.
And that's the thing. If you're pushing the boat all the way out and feeling gross in the middle, and you just come back a bit, you're still further than what you were.
Yeah.
And to have that play.
Yeah.
And
I love that word.
The play, I think, is so important because we do lose it. Mm-hmm. We get conditioned, good girls don't play. Mm. You do this and you do this. And now to be able to come back and go, okay, well, I've survived that. I've traipsed through the mud. I'm going to go and play now.
Yeah.
Watch me.
Yeah.
Of course, I'll be a bit more careful, but I'm still going to play. And whatever that looks like.
I do love the word play. And I also, what I hear in you using that word and how you approached it for yourself and with the women that you style is experiment. And I think that's one thing when I'm trying to help my clients kind of find their joy, because that is seems to be, you know, a really common conversation at some point in the therapeutic journey, that they're just itching to have fun again. And they're, you know, it's like, okay, well, what's going to be fun for you? I often find what paralyzes them is the idea that whatever they decide is going to be fun for them, it must be right.
Mm.
And so because they've got this idea of, you know, geez, I've said that this is going to be fun, and what if it's not fun, and what if I get it wrong, and what, you know, I'll waste money, waste time, sign up for something and I end up kind of abandoning it, whatever. And it just stops them. They then don't follow through.
That fear of failure.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And that fear of
getting
not being
it wrong.
Not being enough.
Yeah.
Or all the enoughs, the good enoughs, I can't do it. I couldn't possibly do it.
Yes.
And it's like, why?
Yeah.
And I was the same.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, oh, I can't spar. Why would I put on gloves and fight? Like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
And then it's like, well,
why not?
I was so scared of it. And now I do it once a week. Yeah. I'm not saying I'm amazing, but I'm less bad than what I was. So,
yeah,
it's just that sort of.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, too, the assumption is I don't like doing things that I'm not good at.
No,
like it's
nobody
just,
does.
It's just, no, that's not how you roll. But I sometimes say to the kids now, it's like, well, how do you expect to be good at it?
Exactly.
And then you have to apply that to yourself and you're like, oh, man, I hate that.
Shouldn't have said that.
I hate that when I'm right and I have to take my own advice.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're like, you're not going to get any better thinking about it or wishing you'd done it.
Yeah, no,
exactly. And whatever it is, you just sort of go, okay, I've got to do the thing.
Yeah.
And eat the frog and do the thing. Yeah, and you go, oh, the frog was actually okay.
Yeah.
That was all right.
I think by this stage of life, a lot of us haven't tried something new for a long time. And so, you know, the things that we're doing in our life, certainly professionally, and if you have pursued some kind of, you know, exercise or whatever, you're probably pretty good at it because you've been doing it for a while. And so the idea of being a beginner, you know, is quite intimidating. I know that when I did my yoga teacher training, which was about 7 years ago, it was so humbling for me to do that. You know, I'd been a psych by then for over 2 decades. And it was a really great reminder that here I am trying to learn something new that I may well go and do for, you know, add to my suite of work and get paid for. And yeah, it was like so overwhelming and so intimidating, but very, very humbling. And the fact that I survived that humbling experience of not being able to retain information, you know, not being able to, you know, get the particular cues right to help guide people through, you know, a mini session and stuff, and needing the practice and the practice and the practice. And I'd been doing yoga as a participant for a long time. Yeah, what that taught me was humility, which is good. Not that I felt that I was a particularly arrogant person, but it was just a really good reminder around humility. And also just that, you know, beginning something is scary, but exactly like you said, that, you know, once you keep doing it and doing it and doing it, you actually get more comfortable with being a beginner. And at the same time, you do progress and you do, those skills do sharpen and get better and better.
So, I think one of my favorite words in the last little bit has been tenacity and audacity.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of having that bravery to go out and do the thing.
Yes.
And I must admit recently, my oldest daughter, who's just turned 10, she has just started playing Little League, and another club needed some players to, otherwise they couldn't compete. And we asked Astrid and said, oh, do you want to do this? And she went, yeah, okay, cool. She'd never played Little League before. The season hadn't started. And she went up to another club in a team of under 12s. She was 9. Team full of boys. And was like, yeah, I'm here.
Yeah.
And then another little girl came along and they became friends, which was great. But these two girls went to another club, playing up an age group.
Yeah.
In a team full of boys in a sport they'd never done.
Yeah.
And I was like, bloody hell.
Yeah.
That is an example. Just so. And she went in every week and she just was like, I don't like this very much. And then, you know, she took it all on board. But
yeah,
just that tenacity and audacity of that little girl. And I went, wow, that's fierce. That's just fierce. And it's like to be able to take that.
Yeah.
And then go, okay, what's something I've always wanted to do that you never got to do? Or something to make your heart smile. And even not being very good, but it brings you so much joy.
Yeah.
Or you can go, okay, I'm doing it. I did it. I'm doing it.
Yeah.
I like doing it. It's now part of who I am.
Yeah.
Having those, the audacity and the tenacity to
those words.
To just, I just think that's really cool.
Yeah.
And again, it comes down to how you show up.
Yeah.
But having the tenacity and audacity and the grit to go, yeah, this is me.
Yeah.
It's just so
cool. I'm going to give it a crack. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you might have just answered the question that I like to kind of, in bringing things to a close, that I like to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway in case it's something different. And that is, if you could give, you know, women any kind of pearls of wisdom, or, you know, like something that really in hindsight, you know, helped you through your midlife bite, what do you think that is?
I think authenticity is key.
Yeah.
If in your heart of hearts you're okay with you and how you have dealt with whatever situation, amazing. Authenticity is key, and love what you love. And love what you love and own it unashamedly. Be unashamed because we've spent so long being shamed for so many things.
Yeah.
So now, if you love it, whether it's oysters, whether it's pickles from the jar, whether it's wearing purple, whatever it is, love it as hard as you can.
Yeah, yeah.
With passion, with personality, and just own it.
Yeah.
And I think that then shines through.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can have, again, tenacity and audacity, to love it so much, then I think that's marvelous. Like, that's just magnificent.
Yeah.
You can have that and just, it's just that something.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And I think, to have that is extra special, passion and personality. If anything is worth doing, passion and personality. Do it with passion and personality.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, oh, I love
and
that.
And that's just, you know, you'll never go wrong.
No.
And authenticity, it's you.
Yeah.
And whatever they say, whatever, it doesn't matter, but it's you. Passion, personality and authenticity, you just can't go wrong.
Yeah. No, you can't.
Can't go wrong.
That's so cool. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
They are, I mean, what a life. Like, I could spend so much more time just kind of delving into the different parts of your life. You've led an interesting life. I have no doubt you will continue to live.
It's quite colourful in all the ways.
I imagine it is quite colourful. Thank you so much for sharing
all of
the things. And it's really, really cool to meet Emma 2.0. I really like her.
Yeah, she's fun. I like her too.
She is fun. She said some funny things over the course of this.
She's cool. I think I'd like her, yeah.
Yeah, you do. And what I will do is I am with the show notes and stuff. We'll have links to your website and Instagram account and stuff so you can see more colour and more crustaceans.
Absolutely. I'm a bandit for crustaceans.
Yeah, I
absolutely.
Love that.
So cool.
So, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having
me. I really
me.
Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much.
Awesome. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the All About Her podcast. If you'd like more information about the menopausal years, are interested in connecting with one of our health practitioners, or perhaps you are actually a health practitioner and you're curious about the membership that we have available for health professionals, perhaps you're interested in our professional development, please go to the All About Her website, which is allabouthercentre.com.au. You can also find us on Instagram under the account of All About Her Centre or me, Kirsten Bowes, clinical psychologist and founder of All About Her. Well, you can find me at The Midlife Psychologist. Looking forward to having you tune in again.